InfoWars.com studios. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday, August 31st, 2018. The last working day before Labor Day, and that is very significant. As you see at the top of the Drudge Report, many people believe that Mueller has got some secret stash. Chuck Todd is telling everybody, don't miss work tomorrow, today. He thinks that today, Mueller is going to release all of this massive treasure trove of evidence that he's been accumulating over the last couple of years. Well, we shall see. The reason they say that is because the panel discussion, many other people believe that if he releases information after Labor Day, before the election, he's going to be accused of tampering with the election. So they believe that if he's got anything, he's going to put it out there. So let's see what he's got. I don't really think he's got anything, but we're going to take a look at that. And we're going to take a look at some other information that is coming out in terms of false flags that may be in the process of being prepared all this week. And I mentioned it briefly earlier this week. But throughout the week, we've had a couple of different things happening. As the Syrians and Russians are gearing up for a final push to take out ISIS, the U.S., people like John Bolton, and of course John McCain would be at the center of this if he were able. He has always been at the center of this, supporting, arming, financing, training terrorists, having his picture taken with groups of them, proudly working with them. But as Syria and Russia are pushing to get rid of the last ISIS stronghold, you have Bolton and others say, I think we're going to have a false flag. We've got to watch out for this. It's like, why would they need to do this? Again, it makes absolutely no sense. If they are in the superior position, just as we saw in Douma and elsewhere, every time they begin a major offensive, what do the Western intelligence services do? They stage a false flag gas attack to justify them becoming the Air Force and the missile defense of ISIS. It hasn't worked so far. They've been exposed every single time this has happened, but it's happened three times, and it looks like it may be happening a fourth time. As a matter of fact, the Russians and the Syrians are so concerned about it that the Russians met with the U.S. State Department and said, look, this is what we know. And it's not so much a warning. It's just that we're on to what you're doing here. This is like the fourth time you're trying to do this. And we understand what's going on here. Here's what we have observed. Here is what we have seen of your players in place to do this, as you've got John Bolton and others saying, you know, we've got to watch out. They're desperate. You know, they've got this massive naval armada parked right off the area. They've encircled these people and are about to wipe them out. So they're going to get desperate and launch a false flag gas attack. And then we'll just have to retaliate and take them down. And we've also had the Syrian ambassador to the UN expose this evidence. This time they're trying to come out ahead of time, because there's never enough time after the gas attack before Nikki Haley and Theresa May and the State Department and London and Langley launch their attacks. And of course, the Americans, the British, and the French have already got their prepositioned attack plans set up. So we're going to take a look at that and what this has done in the past. And we're going to have a little bit of fun with some robotic politicians. That was one of the things that came out of the debate between Cynthia Nixon, the Sex and the City star, and Andrew Cuomo, that is absolutely hilarious. And I didn't get a chance to play that yesterday, so we're going to play that. And we got a special dance from Theresa May. It wasn't enough for her to go to South Africa and worship at the jail cell of communist Nelson Mandela, but she is now doing tribal dances, and it is a sight to be seen. You will not believe it when you see Theresa May doing this. We've heard that they're going to be using robots as politicians. They may have already started. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Stay with us.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday, August 31st, 2018. The last working day before Labor Day, and as I said at the top of the hour, it is significant. Many people who are still pushing this Russian conspiracy and hoping that there's going to be something there to take down President Trump. People like Chuck Todd, as you see at the top of the Drudge Report, he's saying, I wouldn't miss work on Friday, to his fellow colleagues, because he thinks that this is going to be the day that Mueller is going to release his massive vault of information. Well, show us what you got. Show us what you got. We're sick and tired of how this thing has been drug on forever without any evidence. But Chuck Todd issued a warning to the press last night saying, don't miss work tomorrow. He said major developments after Labor Day could be seen as interference in elections, kind of like James Comey. So this is what the panel was discussing last night. Said, well, you know, he's going to have to put this out before Labor Day, so that would mean tomorrow, right up here at the deadline. I think he knows more than anything he needs to keep quiet between Labor Day and Election Day, said Chuck Todd. So I'm not missing work tomorrow. I wouldn't miss work tomorrow. Tomorrow is the last business day pre-Labor Day before this election. And then you have Axios talking about Robert Mueller's secret files, the vault. Let's not talk about Vault 7, which showed that there was no hacking of the election by Russians that we could count on. I mean, clearly you can't count on where something is coming from. All the different things that we were told about, oh, look, this looks like it was done on a Russian computer and so forth. Well, Vault 7, which, and think about this. Of course, it could have been hacked. Anything can be hacked. I've done many interviews with William Binney, the former technical head, global technical head of the NSA for decades. And he said there is absolutely nothing that is safe. Nothing. There is no encryption that cannot be broken. If somebody wants to get to an individual badly enough, they will spend the resources until they crack that encryption. It's just that simple. But you can make it very easy for them, like Hillary Clinton did. But you also have that same individual, William Binney, said we looked at the information that came out of the DNC emails and DNC documents and so forth, and they were not hacked. You can see when those files were initiated and when they were completed. You can see the size of the files, and we know he and other technical people said that that could not be transferred in that amount of time over the internet. It had to be by a thumb drive, which would corroborate what we have been told by WikiLeaks, by Julian Assange, by the British ambassador who said, I went to the United States, I was given the information on a thumb drive by an individual. And they have never lied to us, unlike the mainstream media. So it's not possible. And everybody that's involved says it's not possible. And of course, the people who are saying there were 17, a consensus of 17 intelligence agencies, that was a line that Hillary Clinton threw out at a debate. And it was parroted and repeated by James Clapper, the liar. And then when he was put under oath, he said, well, no, it wasn't 17 agencies. It was actually a representative from the FBI, a representative from the NSA, and a representative from the CIA meeting with me. And since he was director of national intelligence, they were going to agree with him. And they did agree with him. Don't you think that this is what happened, even though we haven't been allowed to see the servers and so forth? So this whole thing is a sham. Nevertheless, you know, as we say, they can get into different things. We've seen the NSA hacked. We've seen the CIA hacked. The CIA's hacking tools have been exposed, put out on the internet. That's why I was talking about Vault 7. We've seen personnel files from the Pentagon put out there. You've had your information stolen from credit reporting agencies. The Federal Reserve notes and minutes have been hacked many times by the Chinese government because they're interested in the money, because they know that gives them leverage and political power and military power. And so we've seen everything hacked, from the Pentagon to the Federal Reserve to the NSA to the CIA. Everything has been hacked. But this discussion about Russia was a dodge by Hillary Clinton to make sure that you didn't look at the content that was released there. And all this stuff about collusion has not surfaced. But Axios says Robert Mueller's got secret files. And speculation is hot that the president's legal team today could, within the president's legal team, that today could be a day for action by Bob Mueller. Again, because it's the last working day before Labor Day. I said, remember all the evidence that the special counsel has or could have that we haven't seen. Oh, it could have evidence. And maybe we're going to see what they could have. And then they say, who would have predicted an indictment like the one brought against Russian intelligence officials? It reads like the synopsis of a John le Carré novel. Yes, it does read like pure fiction, doesn't it? And the dossier that Christopher Steele put together. I mean, just think about that. How impressive that sounds. The Steele dossier. Remington Steele. John le Carré, so forth. Yeah, it was just pure fiction. It was just filthy fiction. Something that would come out of the filthy imagination of somebody like John Podesta and the Clintons. It was pure fiction. It was pulp fiction. And we're supposed to believe that the Dirty Dozen, this indictment, you know, he's like, who would have predicted an indictment of the Dirty Dozen? These Russians, which is absolutely meaningless. They're not going to be turned over by the Russian government, number one. The indictment is meaningless in that regard. And it's absolute nonsense to think that these Dirty Dozen, if they had even done that, let's say that they bought $100,000 in Facebook ads, which Zuckerberg, after being browbeat repeatedly by the Democrats to say that they had done something, oh, well, you know, we could identify like $100,000 in ads that maybe were associated with these people, and as if that would change anything in a race where one side, Hillary's side, spends over $1 billion. $100,000? Unbelievable. Anyway, so here's some of the evidence we've yet to see. Things like President Trump's tax returns and his bank records and Trump organization records, all these financial things, because they can do a process crime for that. Doesn't mean there's any collusion. No conspiracy. None of this original crime. This is a witch hunt to get process crimes on President Trump. And again, you can manufacture that. As I've said before, the complexity of the income tax code, the complexity of international financial crimes, and the complexity of Federal Election Commission crimes, which even several Federal Election Commission former chairs have said is too complex. Nobody can understand what that is. So each of those three different financial areas have regulations in them that are so complex that there's the same as having no law at all. And so you put all three of those together, yes, you could get some indictments. Who knows what he's going to do? As an MSNBC analyst summarized, basically everything. Basically everything is evidence that we've yet to see. In other words, we haven't seen anything yet. And not in the sense of George M. Cohen. You know, like, you ain't seen nothing yet. No, this is like, we haven't seen anything yet. And it continues to go on and on. But even if they have nothing, they're going to pretend that it's a big deal, just like they did with the Dirty Dozen and the Dirty Dossier or the Filthy Fiction. And so you have Rudy Giuliani putting together a counter report because they are afraid, just like Chuck Todd, that they're going to come out with something and they're going to have to respond to it. Because even though this is technically before Labor Day, it is still going to be timed to affect the election. Part of this report that's being put together by Giuliani, reports the Daily Beast, would examine whether the initiation of the investigation was legitimate or not. Yeah, it wasn't. And we know that. So it's going to be divided into two sections. One alleging possible conflicts of interest by federal law enforcement officers. The other section will respond to more substantive allegations of Trump campaign collusion with Russian government agents, which there hasn't been any, and obstruction of justice allegations stemming from, among other things, the president's firing of former FBI Director James Comey. Again, this is coming from the Daily Beast. The firing of Comey is not obstruction. This investigation has languished on for well over a year after that point. And there's been no evidence of any crime. How do you get somebody on obstruction of justice when there is no crime? There's been no evidence of collusion. And there has been a lot of evidence about possible conflicts of interest. As a matter of fact, I've talked about this and so many other people on virtually a daily basis. We give you updates on the conflicts of interest, on the absence of any evidence. But they're putting something together because they think today is going to be the day that the ball drops. And I've got some balls to drop on the other side that I think you haven't heard. So stay with us. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. As we were saying in the last segment, everybody on both sides believes that something is going to be released today. The Democrats are hoping that finally they're going to see some evidence. They haven't seen anything yet. It's not like, oh, you've seen some stuff, but the really big stuff's coming. No, you haven't seen anything yet. Nothing. Zero. Nada. Have you seen? And they're hoping that there is some secret trove of information and dirt that Bob Mueller has got on President Trump. He probably will release something, even if it is as inconsequential and nonsensical as the Dirty Dozen Russians who supposedly threw the election. He'll probably put something out. So Rudy Giuliani and his team are putting something together to respond to them. Have two parts, as I said. One is going to take a look at conflicts of interest. Do you think there's conflicts of interest when Rod Rosenstein is one of the key witnesses in this and he won't recuse himself? Do you think there's conflicts of interest when these guys have had relationships with each other, business relationships, Hillary Clinton relationships, political relationships for decades? And this whole thing looks like a Dickens novel, the way everybody is interconnected to each other in that filthy town of Washington, D.C. It is something of a Uriah Heep of excrement, isn't it? But as they're putting this stuff together, Giuliani says, so far, they've got a very big report. So the first half of it is 58 pages. The second half of it isn't done yet. They're waiting to see what kind of nonsense Mueller is going to come up with. And I think it is nonsense. I think if there was anything there, they would have come out with this long time ago. And we've talked about the corruption and the conspiracy that is going on, and as well as the double standard. I don't know how any fair-minded person could look at this and think this is an honest investigation. It truly is a witch hunt. This truly is an attempted political coup. So they're waiting to see what kind of garbage is going to be released by Mueller, thinking that it's going to happen today. Giuliani said, I don't think there's anything in it that isn't publicly available in some form or the other. There's no secret grand jury material here. And we already knew, even when there was so-called secret grand jury report, wasn't really. It was the House Intelligence Committee, and we were told by the Department of Justice and the FBI, you can't see that, can't see that. Why were they trying to cover that up? Well, they were trying to cover their butts. There wasn't anything in there that exposed any methods or personnel, unlike Hillary Clinton's emails, which resulted in more than a dozen spies working for the CIA in China being executed during the period of time that her emails were readily, not only readily available to everyone, but the Chinese had even put a piece of code on her server to send a courtesy copy to them every time she got or received or sent anything or received anything. And then they were rounding up spies and executing them. When we got the declassified report out of the House Intelligence Committee that the FBI and the Department of Justice were trying to cover up, we saw that there wasn't anything at all classified about that that needed to be classified to protect anyone or anything. And we also saw that we knew all of that. And so I don't think there's going to be any surprises in this. But here's a surprise. As we're talking about McCain, and of course, McCain's funeral procession is going to be this weekend. As we see all the people lining up to pay their respects to this guy that they love so much, and it's kind of interesting to see how this is shaking out. And we're going to take a little bit of a look at the people and the funeral that is coming up here. But going back to June, we had Judicial Watch, and they're very good at dragging documents. That's what Judicial Watch is excellent at. You know, they'll file a Freedom of Information request from the government, and the government will stonewall them and refuse to release the information. So Judicial Watch goes to court time and time again and sues them and gets this information released. Well, back at the end of June, and I didn't report this at the time, Judicial Watch got information about a meeting with Lois Lerner and others, where you had John McCain's subcommittee staff director urging the IRS to engage in ruining people financially by targeting them. Now, I just want you to think about how disturbing this is. And I want you to think about how John McCain backstabs everybody. You know, I had Ben Garrison on the other day to talk about John McCain, and he said, I think that really is the theme of John McCain. Backstabbing everyone. Backstabbing the POWs and the MIAs that were left behind. Backstabbing his wife when he came back. Total disregard for other people as he was an early pilot before he got shot down. Backstabbing everybody with Obamacare. He almost didn't win that last election, but he promised that he was going to do something about Obamacare. And then he goes in and he gives the veto thumb signal and sneers at everybody to shut that down, backstabbing the GOP voters in his state and backstabbing the GOP voters nationwide. And of course, he flip-flopped us on both sides of the issue on climate change and Planned Parenthood, depending on political gain and so forth. But he was a backstabber to the Tea Party. Just going back to this report on June 21st, because this is very important. This all ties together with this investigation, believe me. I'm going to show this to you how it's tied together. McCain Minority Staff Director Henry Koerner said the IRS official Lois Lerner and other IRS officials, the solution is to audit so many that it becomes financially ruinous. Oh, well, they were doing that, weren't they? Judicial Watch, back on June 21st, released newly obtained internal IRS documents, including material revealing that John McCain's former staff director, chief counsel on the Senate Homeland Security Permanent Subcommittee, Henry Koerner, urged top U.S. or IRS officials, including then-director of exempt organizations Lois Lerner, to audit so many that you ruined them financially. The exchange was contained in notes taken by IRS employees at an April 30th, 2013 meeting between Koerner, Lerner, and other high-ranking IRS officials. Just 10 days after the meeting, former IRS Director of Exempt Organizations Lois Lerner admitted that the IRS had a policy of improperly and deliberately delaying applications for tax-exempt status from conservative nonprofit groups. This was a marathon meeting to discuss concerns raised by both Senator Carl Levin and Senator John McCain. Now, both of them hated this Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, that freed up the rules restricting corporations being involved in campaigns. They both hated that. So they went to the IRS and said, what can you do at the IRS to shut down the Supreme Court decision that frees up the political process, the free speech of corporations and so forth? And John McCain has publicly said it was the worst decision he had ever seen. He really hated Citizens United. So he works with this Democrat, Carl Levin, and they bring in their staffers. They meet with Lois Lerner, Steve Miller, who is then chief of staff to IRS Commissioner Flax, and other IRS officials. And McCain's guy says maybe the solution is to audit so many that it is financially ruinous. And Lerner responded, it's my job to oversee that. Now, as this came out, and then, and I'll just remind you that a month before this came out, so that came out from Judicial Watch in June. In May, a $3.5 million award to Tea Party groups because they've been targeted by the Obama IRS in previous years. I'm going to tell you what Henry Koerner did. I'm going to tell you the other things that Henry Koerner, staffer to John McCain, did, and what he is currently doing right now. I think you'll find this very interesting. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, live and uncensored, broadcasting from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
You know, as everything is coming to a head, and we have the big funeral production coming up for John McCain this weekend in Washington, the corruption, the backstabbing of this man's career, as you look at the different aspects of it, you can't cover it all in one program. You can't cover it even in three programs. This is the third time I've talked about his legacy, and this is something I haven't talked about before. And it needs to be said, because as Judicial Watch uncovered in June of this year, finally got the information out of the IRS showing notes of a meeting where John McCain and his staffer was there with him, directing Lois Lerner to engage in financially ruinous targeting of political groups. Now, I'm going to give you his explanation as to why he says, well, we weren't coming after the Tea Party groups. That had happened before. Well, it was still ongoing at the time of this meeting. And it was still continuing, and they were begging for it to be escalated even further. But how do you ever justify using the IRS as a political weapon against people. What you do if you're John McCain and people like his staffer, and I'm going to tell you what his staffer, Henry Koerner, is doing today and what he's done in the interim since then. But of course, in May of this year, finally got an award of $3.5 million to various Tea Party groups that were targeted by the Obama IRS. Remember going back to the impeachment of Richard Nixon, one of the charges against him that was worthy of impeachment, and it was worthy of impeachment, was that he wanted the IRS to target his political enemies. Well, it turns out the IRS was run by a Democrat. He didn't want to target these people. He took the list of political enemies that Nixon wanted ruined by the IRS and stuck it in a safe and then used it against Richard Nixon. With Obama, they were coming after conservatives, which the IRS did not like. People who wanted smaller government, who wanted less of the IRS. And so they complied with Obama, but there was no impeachment of Obama. And nothing was done to John McCain and Carl Levin, who were egging them on to do even more. So as this report surfaced, a couple of days later, Gateway Pundit contacted Henry Koerner and said, tell us about this. Is this accurate? And I want you to hear his explanation. He said, well, the targeting of the Tea Party occurred before the 2012 election, and the report in question was published in September of 2014. Well, let's think about that timing here. This meeting occurred April of 2013, and they published the report in September of 2014, a year and a half later. This is not really an explanation. There really isn't, as I said, any explanation for why you would ever go to a meeting and demand that the IRS financially ruin your political opponents, which is what McCain and his staffer did. But going on with this, he said, well, and of course, that report that was produced a year and a half after that meeting, there was a report that came out, and Carl Levin did a report, and we disagreed with him on some key issues, and so we did our own report. We didn't put our name on that report. Again, that is no excuse. Of course, they don't want you to know that they were targeting the Tea Party, because that's essentially what John McCain always did. He stabbed people in the back. And so he's not going to tell you what he's really trying to do with the IRS. He's going to have another report out there. He'll let the Democrats come out there and say, yeah, we should target these Tea Party groups and so forth. But John McCain's not going to do that. That's part of his backstabbing personality here that he always had. And then what is Henry Koerner, this guy who was working with him? What is his position in all of this? Well, the same John McCain staffer reports conservative Treehouse, again, back in June when all this came out, told the IRS to weaponize their database to target Tea Party groups and other people that John McCain doesn't like. The same guy, John Koerner, the staffer of John McCain, has been involved in Fast and Furious. He's been involved in Benghazi. He was involved in this IRS targeting of Tea Party groups. And now guess what? He is involved in the Spygate attacks against President Trump. How does he get to all these positions? Well, right now, he is same guy that was doing all these things, is right now in charge of D.C. corruption and whistleblowing cases, including the FBI and the Department of Justice. So he's in a position where he can shut down any whistleblowers that want to come out and expose what's going on with Comey and the rest of these people. Mueller, Rosenstein. He can shut down all these whistleblowers if he wishes. He is special counsel in charge of all whistleblowing witnesses in cases of government corruption, and he is in a position to manipulate and control these investigation outcomes. The same guy who was saying we've got to target Tea Party groups and financially ruin them is now working with the FBI and Department of Justice whistleblowers. Anybody that is honest in those departments has to go through this guy who wanted to use the IRS to target Tea Party groups and shut them down. What a surprise that this thing continues to go on and on and on. But we're going to have everybody meeting this weekend in Washington. You're going to see the funeral of our dear leader of the deep state. And as we saw Joe Biden yesterday crying, one of the staffers said, maybe they can bring in John Boehner because he's really good at crying too. Crying at in the eulogy as he's giving this for John McCain. I think that what we have already seen and what we're about to see over the weekend, I think that the Democrats can actually do better than the people in North Korea who are mourning their dear leader. Remember this? Let's run the clip of the funeral of the dear leader, Kim Jong-il. And then all the crying witnesses out there. Let's hold it right there. We got some, if you move a little bit further in, we got people who are crying. And I think we can get those criers. I think we can do a better job of all those people. Remember all the actors that were out there? Can you fast forward that video a little bit to the right spot? And we'll show that to people. But, you know, we had Joe Biden. And, of course, we got, there we are. There you can see the B-roll of all the people. I remember that when that happened. And as I tweeted out yesterday, I think the Democrats really can do a better job than these people because their political lives depend on it, just like those people's lives in North Korea depended on them showing their grief for the dear leader. Well, we got the dear leader of the deep state. NATO wants to rename their Brussels headquarters after him. Google, even though it was just suggested by Chuck Schumer, Google immediately went in and renamed the Senate building after John McCain because the deep state, the globalist state, loves this guy. Obama said he was surprised when John McCain asked him to speak at his funeral. And I imagine Sarah Palin was also surprised when she was told she couldn't attend. This is what happens when you support the backstabber. And Sarah Palin helped him out in that election, where because of his age and because of his history and so many things that people had seen that had about enough of John McCain this last time he got elected. And he was about to lose to a conservative, and Sarah Palin came in, called in his favors to Sarah Palin. She's got a lot of street creds with conservatives for some reason. And so she came in and defended John McCain, helped him to get reelected as he was telling them, don't worry, I'm going to work with you. We're going to shut down Obamacare. I know you don't like that. Look, John McCain would have never been allowed to be the candidate by the establishment Republicans if he hadn't been on board with taking over health care. That's especially true of Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney had already done it with Ted Kennedy. And they knew that John McCain would be malleable, that he would work with him. He'd worked with Ted Kennedy to do open borders and so forth. And so Sarah Palin helps him to push that lie that he's going to get rid of Obamacare. And just as he stabbed everybody in the back when he did thumbs down on Obamacare, he's now stabbing her in the back. That's what he does to the people who cover for him. And it's not just her. It's also other top 2008 campaign ads, as reported by Politico, have been shut out of the McCain funeral. Campaign manager Steve Schmidt, senior advisor Nicole Wallace, longtime strategist John Weaver are snubbed, as was former running mate Sarah Palin. Now it's all Democrats and deep state and globalists. Maybe he'll have George Soros and some ISIS people at the funeral. Who knows? We're going to take a look at the false flag that is coming to Syria, perhaps very soon. And evidence of this one. We've already seen this happen 3 times. We've been very active here at InfoWars to try to stop these false flag attacks being used as justification to drag us into war. Also tried to stop using them as them being used as justification to aid ISIS. And again, when you look at the history of people like John McCain, he will use anyone, anywhere to achieve his victory. And he hasn't achieved too many victories. I think when you look at the life of John McCain, it really shows us what is wrong with American foreign policy, what is wrong with what our government has been doing post-World War II. We've had one failure after the other because we have a failure to have any kind of moral integrity about what we're going to do. We attack people, we set countries on fire, we overthrow regimes. People like John McCain and the CIA have been doing this continually and losing every single war, creating more war and chaos, leaving everybody worse, including us, in the aftermath of this. The blowback that is coming back to American citizens is horrible on this, not to mention the wasted American lives and the uncounted number of foreign lives that have been lost in all this, and the money, of course, that's involved in this. We're going to get back to that. We're going to take a look at the false flag that's coming to Syria and how this fourth one is being attacked in a different way. Syria and Russia are trying to get out preemptively to say, you know, why can't we just let them finish off ISIS? Why do we have to keep using these people? And this is something that goes back to the early days of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. John McCain, as a very young politician, was still pushing that kind of stuff, having meetings where they would bring in wealthy Republican women. Have you adopted your Muj yet? Your Mujahideen? Hey, I got mine right here at the meeting. And yeah, we're, you know, adopt a Muj. Give them some money so that you can buy some weapons for them. We can have a civil war there. So how did that all work out for us in Afghanistan? Well, we got the Russians out, and we got the Taliban in, and now we're in, and we're staying in. Here we are 18 years later, and we're staying in. So we are going to take a look at what's going on in Syria. Before we do, real quickly, to help you wake up with real news every morning, we've got a special on our Wake Up America Patriot Blend coffee. Just use the code REALNEWS at checkout to save 20% off of either the original or the immune support blends of Wake Up America Patriot Blend coffee. And that's just exclusive to our listeners here. We also have some other specials at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this program. We have bodies that we have brought back in a large quantity just for this special, 50% off. A great way to ease the inflammation that comes in your body, because one of the key ingredients in this is turmeric. But turmeric has many other uses besides stopping inflammation. But you can now get BodEase, which has a key component of that is a large amount of popular turmeric and many other ingredients that help that to work more effectively. You can get that 50% off along with a new product, Ultimate Female Force, perfect companion or alternative to Super Female Vitality. Ultimate Female Force is available right now, 50% off. And we have brought back with a new supplier and better ingredients, Ultimate Bone Broth, 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Check out the specials that we have there. That's what funds this program, keeps free speech going here, and helps you to protect your health at the same time. All right, when we're talking about the people that John McCain will use, let's talk about Ukraine, for example. We're going to be talking to Lee Stranahan, and he's got an interview that he wants to break the contents of that down for us to show how we have overthrown the government in Ukraine with George Soros, the State Department under Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and also with John McCain's assistance. And they're going to try to return the favor to us. They're going to try to overturn our elections as well. So we've got that interview with Lee Stranahan coming up in the fourth hour. But it's kind of ironic, and several news organizations have pointed this out, Free Thought Project, Fair.org had, I thought, the best picture here, because they show the picture from the Washington Post, and they have John McCain with his arm raised in a salute. Right arm, raising a salute. The human rights community lost a champion. And right next to that, they put the guy that is there in the picture with him, with his arm raised in a right arm salute, a Nazi salute. Because the guy that they're talking about being a human rights champion, that the Washington Post is putting out there as a human rights champion, was working with Nazis in the Ukraine, just like he's working with ISIS terrorists in Syria and elsewhere. And this is columnist Jennifer Rubin, getting very poetic, as Fair.org put it, on the ostensible lost champion of human rights, who modeled for others the behavior of a free society. Can you believe this tripe coming out of the Washington Post about John McCain? I just can't stand the lies anymore. Makes me disgusted. That's why I spend so much time on this. Look, I'm sorry for John McCain's family, but I can't stand the lies about what this man did as a politician. With a possible exception of the U.S. military, says Washington Post's Jennifer Rubin, no group is more indebted to Senator John McCain than the neo-Nazis of the Ukraine. No, she said, than the human rights community. This guy that he is pictured with, in the very picture that the Washington Post uses, that you can see right there to my side, is none other than the Ukrainian neo-Nazi leader Ola Tanibrok, a longtime fascist. His call for a war on so-called Muscovite Jewish mafia. And the Washington Post failed to identify him, of course. He has represented the neo-Nazi party in Ukraine's parliament, a party that's called Rada. It's got a longer name, but we'll just use the shorter name, Rada. The far-right extremists sought to honor Ukrainian fascists who had collaborated with Nazi Germany during World War II, amongst other things. Seeing Jews under every rock, behind every conspiracy. Matt Taibbi talked about in Rolling Stone, why did John McCain continue to support war? He said, you would think that some of these people, he said, he was surprised to see Stevie Wonder, who had written a searing anti-Vietnam War song, pay tribute to John McCain. But he said, as he thought about that song, you know, because we've also had Stevie Wonder, who, when he was doing a tribute to Aretha Franklin, blamed her death on global warming. Yeah, he should stick to the songs. Stevie Wonder writes great songs, but he doesn't seem to know what's going on, does he? But one of the lyrics in that song that Matt Taibbi was talking about was, my mind is so brainwashed, I would probably go back and do it again. And he said, maybe that's what was going on with John McCain. He said, McCain was not, generally speaking, a man of strong beliefs. This is very important. He's not somebody out there who is crusading for human rights, as the Washington Post wants to tell us. Matt Taibbi said, one of the most honest things he ever said was that he didn't run for president to enact reforms or out of some, quote, grand sense of patriotism, unquote, but simply because, quote, it had become my ambition to become president. That's it. The naked ambition. That's why I said this guy reminds me more of Dr. Strangelove than anybody else. It had become his ambition to be president. He didn't want to make things better for anybody. It was just his ambition. And he said he did have one unshakable conviction. Wherever America had a foreign policy problem, the solution was always to bomb the F out of somebody. Long before he became a symbol for anti-Trumpism, McCain defied the mainstream GOP to support Bill Clinton's airstrikes in Kosovo. And McCain wanted to go even further, to a ground invasion. He never saw a conflict that he didn't want to make worse. He never saw a conflict that he didn't want to get us involved in. That's why he is the perfect icon for the American deep state, for the warfare state, for the welfare state. Doing thumbs down for the welfare state on any kind of pushback against Obamacare. And doing thumbs up for any war. Because he doesn't respect life or liberty throughout his political career. He had nothing but ambition, naked ambition. That's why I tweeted out yesterday, my favorite eulogy to McCain came from Eric Peters, who was my guest yesterday, epautos.com. And he had an article about John McCain. And I posted this on the tweet from Eric Peters. He said, if you mourn freedom's loss, and you should be glad, that John McCain is gone as well. A North Korean-style dear leader funeral is now on deck, and it would be healthy if millions of Americans turned their backs, or better yet, gathered friends together for a cookout to celebrate. Not to celebrate the man's death, but to celebrate that his death renders him powerless at last. At last he's gone. At last he's gone. Good riddance. And so let's take a look when we come back. At his legacy, however, the deep state legacy of overthrowing regimes, supporting terrorists, because you think it's going to make things better, or just because it's going to give a perpetual war for your customers at the military-industrial complex. You know, that kind of symbiotic relationship that's going on between the deep state and the big contractors who put out their eulogies for John McCain, where they hated to see him go. We'll be right back. Take a look at what's going on in Syria.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. As we said, everybody is waiting to see if anything is going to ever be released by Mueller. He's got a lot of information that he's obtained, financial information that he could use to create process crimes. And so the left is anxiously awaiting, thinking that today he will do something, because if he does it after Labor Day, he'll be accused of trying to tamper with the elections. As if he releases it today, he's not tampering. This whole thing is about tampering with the elections. Shutting down InfoWars is about tampering with the elections. Shutting down conservatives on social media is about tampering with the elections. All of this is. It's a very, very broad approach. President Trump is understands what's going on with that, and he's talking about the social censors, and we're going to go back and take a look at what might possibly be done about that. As I pointed out the other day, we have to be careful. We don't want to do anything to damage free speech. But we have to understand that what is happening right now is corporate censorship, and it's being done with these people acting as surrogates for the government. We've all seen the government demanding that InfoWars be taken down. We've seen them demanding that InfoWars not have any stories listed, and then they said, take them down, and so forth, and they eventually did it all at the same time. You can't see that this is coming from the government? It's a little bit harder to see, but you should understand that all these social media companies' public monopolies came from the government. I've pointed it out many times, how they were funded by the CIA's venture capital firm, NQTEL, and other venture capital firms that had the chairs of the head of DARPA sitting on their boards and so forth. The intelligence community, not just the CIA, but the entire intelligence community, DARPA and others, got heavily involved in creating all of these companies that now rule the internet. The internet was initially a DARPA psychological project. And as it started going mainstream, they wanted to make sure that they had certain individuals that they could use, that they could control, people like Zuckerberg and so forth, that would do what they wanted to do. They put them in place. And they have used they've used press organizations to shut down participation in debates by third parties and independent candidates, saying, well, it's a press association, and that's a private organization. And they get to make the decision. It's not the Democrats and Republicans. It's not the government shutting down free speech. It's the press that's doing it. The press association says that they don't want to have a third party in the debate, you know, because it would be uncontrollable if you had three people. Yeah, it would be uncontrollable. They wouldn't be able to control the topics. They wouldn't be able to do this. Well, on the one hand, you've got this guy that you don't like, but you hate this other guy even more approach. And it's a lot harder. You know, we talk about how dirty politics has become. It's a lot harder to do dirty politics when you've got more than two people there. Because when you got one guy and he starts throwing mud at everybody else, he looks bad. You know, you can have one guy, if it's just two people, one guy can throw mud at the other one. And the other guy throws it back. And the people who like their policies are going to say, well, the other guy started it. But if you got three people, that does put something of a limit on that kind of mud. But it also opens up new issues that the establishment media and the establishment parties will not talk about at a debate. And so I've seen this pattern of censorship being applied for a very long time. I know exactly what it looks like. They're just doing it on a bigger scale than they've ever done it before. And they're censoring your speech, not just the press, but they're censoring your free speech. Freedom of the press is a different thing than the free speech of the citizens. The free speech of the citizens on social media, your ability to be able to pass this around and to put your comments on things, is what is really being shut down. And it is an attempt to manipulate the election. Coming up in the third hour, we're going to have Lee Stranahan joining us to talk about some overt plans that have been exposed coming out of the Ukraine to manipulate our election. After we've manipulated that government, they're going to return the favor that John McCain and George Soros, Victoria Nuland, and the Obama administration did to them. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. It looks like a false flag is coming to the Syrian war again to justify involvement by the U.S., the British, and the French to act as the air force and the missile defense for ISIS. This is coming as Syria and Russia have escalated things to finish off one of the big strongholds of ISIS. And this happens every time they start to take ISIS down. You'll see a false flag gas attack, and followed up with a knee-jerk reaction whether or not it was a gas attack, regardless of who did it, you immediately have the missiles launched. And so what is happening this time as they see this happening, because it has been telegraphed by John Bolton, oh, I think there's going to be a gas attack done by the Syrians. We've already seen this attempted three times. We've seen each of those three times that it was a lie once the investigation was done. And now you've got John Bolton saying, well, I think that's going to happen. And if it does, we're going to be ready to strike. Well, of course they are. They've always are ready to strike without any justification, using it as an excuse. And so as we saw on Tuesday, we had a speech that was delivered to the UN Security Council. Syria's permanent UN representative claimed to have provided information to the Security Council that was evidence that armed opposition groups, including al-Qaeda affiliate al-Nusra Front, the people that John McCain would always have his picture taken with, were gearing up to use chemical weapons against civilians in the Syrian province of Idlib in an effort to frame the Syrian government for an attack. So Syrians go to the National Security Council at the UN this time and say, look, we know that they're setting it up, and we got evidence, and here's the evidence. And the Russians did the same thing to the U.S. State Department. Not that they're trying to deter them necessarily, but to say, we're going to make this information public so that when you do it, it's going to be exposed ahead of time. Because you guys don't wait for any investigation. You do a false flag and you immediately launch missiles. The warning comes as Syria and its allies are preparing for a major military offensive that would target the rebel-held Idlib province, which even mainstream Western outlets admit is dominated by terrorist groups and their affiliates, reports Mint Press. And what he said was, I put in your hands documented information on the preparations taken by al-Nusra, the al-Nusra Front, the terrorist organization, and the affiliated groups to use chemical weapons against civilians in Idlib province to accuse the Syrian Arab Army and to justify any aggression that might be launched on Syria. Again, this is the kind of thing that we have seen from John McCain and from the CIA and the military-industrial complex endlessly since the end of World War II. Endlessly. And it never works out well for us or for anyone. Setting countries on fire. Creating chaos everywhere. You know, I go back again to Get Smart. The two different groups in that spy parody were chaos. They were the bad guys. And control. They were the good guys that Maxwell Smart worked for. Well, you know what? We're not control. We're chaos. We're spreading chaos and death and war everywhere with our regime changes and setting up these false flags. I'm about to do it again. It follows similar warnings from Russia's defense ministry, which warned in a statement on Tuesday, same day, that a, quote, large supply of poisonous chemical agents has been brought to the city of Sarakib on two trucks from the village of Afs, and that the deadly cargo has been accompanied by eight members of the White Helmets. Oh, yes, the White Helmets. At it again. Received by two high-ranking commanders. This has long been a battlefield, this area. Arar al-Sham has long been a battlefield of al-Nusra Front. And the New York Times wrote in 2015 that its membership included associates of Osama bin Laden. In addition, the White Helmets group that gets millions in funding from Western governments has repeatedly been linked to falsifying evidence of both bombings and chemical weapon attacks in order to facilitate Western military intervention in the Syrian conflict. Don't you remember when we just had this in Douma? And we had Robert Fisk go there to do an investigation? Somebody actually did an investigation after the fact? Nikki Haley, of course, Theresa May, demanding that something be done right away. And again, when they did it, because it was the third time, and they typically do it at exactly the same time of year, amazingly enough. Of course, that's kind of coinciding with the offensives and so forth. But this time around, you had Theresa May adding the false flag gas attack in the UK with the Skripals, not too far away from Portendown, their chemical weapons facility. Just a couple of miles away, pretending that it was nerve gas, when if it was nerve gas, as Vladimir Putin said, nobody would have survived. But out of the five people that were allegedly poisoned, of course, we had reports that were put out by the British press, oh, look, we've got dozens of people have been brought into hospitals, and the hospital guy said, no, that's not happening. That's not happening at all. Nobody's here. Nobody's sick with this stuff. Same kind of thing that happened with that attack in Douma when Robert Fisk went there and talked to the people in the hospital. They said, no, actually, we were treating people who were suffering from inhaling too much dust because of the bombing. I mean, there was so much dust because of the bombing and that offensive that people were dying, suffocating from the dust. But he goes, at one point, a white helmet walks in the door and screams, chemical gas attack, or something like that. And he said, that's the point at which everybody started panicking and they started pouring water on people. And that was where that came from. It was a guy essentially running in and yelling fire in a crowded theater. And the doctor said there was no poison gas. In the same way, there was no nerve gas in the Skripal poisoning. He had a doctor who worked on Skripal and his daughter for 30 minutes without any protective covering. Said, yeah, I thought they were having some kind of an opioid epidemic attack. And then afterwards, you don't see that. You don't hear about that for quite some time, not widely reported. But what was widely reported and widely pictured were all these people coming in with hazmat suits and so forth and marking everything off. But again, if that had been the case, they would have been dead. The doctor would have been dead that was treating them. Those opioid-like symptoms that they had were eventually, as they finally got around after a couple of months to sending the tests off to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, they found BZ, which would have produced those kinds of symptoms. BZ is a secondary class of chemical weapon. Secondary class chemical weapons means that they have other uses besides just being used as a weapon. It has industrial uses. If you're poisoned with it, you don't necessarily die. You look as if you've been exposed to opioids. And they did find a trace of Novichok, but the Swiss lab kind of slyly said, well, this was a pristine virgin sample of Novichok, and this was 6 to 8 weeks after the event, and it hadn't degraded at all. Kind of looked like it had just been put in there before it was sent to the Swiss for them to find it. Later on, two more people came across a vial and got poisoned. One of those individuals then died. So that's only one out of five people that were allegedly exposed to this Novichok. And again, that was a few months even beyond that. So why would this individual die coming into exposure with that when the people who are supposedly the targets of this not die from being exposed to that? A lot of questions about that, and people should be asking those questions. Why are we being lied to by the British government, by the American government, people like Nikki Haley and so forth, provoking President Trump to shoot the missiles in, as he did in the aftermath of that last attack? Robert Fisk, when he went in there and talked to the doctors, talked to other survivors, absolutely everybody said no chemicals involved. He tried to find the white helmets. They had already left to go to a terrorist stronghold. So Russia says its diplomats in Washington formally reached out to U.S. officials and have briefed them on an impending plan by al-Qaeda insurgents in Idlib to stage a false flag chemical attack to provoke a Western military strike. They don't need much provocation. They're looking at this to justify an attack. They're not looking at it to respond to that. And they said they met with, it's been confirmed by the State Department, according to Reuters, they have confirmed that the State Department and the Russians did meet, that they provided them evidence. I don't know if they think that they're going to stop Nikki Haley and the McCain acolytes. I think they're just saying, hey, we know what you're up to. Talking about John McCain setting the world on fire, as I said a couple of days ago. I would read his eulogy, but it's covered in blood. So let's lighten things up a little bit. Let's talk about some lying politicians that are still alive. And of course, we saw them in action in the Cuomo-Cynthia Nixon debate. It was 2 days ago. We played some excerpts from it yesterday, but this excerpt you haven't seen yet. And I think it is one of the most entertaining excerpts I've seen from any debate. They spent a lot of time after Cynthia Nixon came out and said, oh, well, you know, what qualifies me? Well, I'm a mother and a housewife. And she's not going to talk about being a Hollywood actress. She doesn't really have any experience. But, you know, she has a kid in school, and she wants to spend lots and lots more money on schools because they just aren't working, even though they're spending more in New York City per capita on the children's education there than anywhere else in the country, and getting some of the worst results. Illiteracy rates in the areas like New York City, Washington, D.C., Chicago, so forth, where they're spending more than $20,000 per pupil, and they're getting illiteracy rates that are between 95% and 98%, and innumeracy rates, they can't do math either, of those same levels, 95 to 98%, even though they're spending the most money. So let's just throw some more money after it. That was her thing. But they quickly got on to talking about who hates President Trump more and who can do more to oppose President Trump as governor of New York. And then they started attacking each other. And I want to play for you this exchange where she jumps in and says, he says, will you stop interrupting me? And she says, will you stop lying? He says, I will when you do. It basically admits that he's lying. Here's that clip from the debate between Cuomo and Nixon.
My opponent lives in the world of fiction. I live in the world of fact. Let's just do a few facts, okay?
Freeze that soundbite.
The subway system is owned by New York City.
The subway system has been controlled by the state since 1965.
Can you stop interrupting? Can you stop interrupting?
Can you stop lying?
Yeah. As soon as you do.
Can you stop lying? As soon as you do. In other words, yeah, I'm a liar. This guy, you know, we talk about Chris Cuomo and how stupid he is. He's a commentator for CNN. But I think we take these two Cuomo brothers and we may do a remake of Dumb and Dumber. And I don't know which one plays the dumber role. But yeah, I'm going to stop lying when you do. And then they go back and forth accusing each other of being a corporation. Nixon ripped Cuomo as a corrupt corporate Democrat. And he goes, you're a corporation. Because she uses an S corporation for her income tax strategy. And she says, I'm a person. Whether they're people or corporations. And of course, this is the same Democrat Party that just loves censorship by corporations. They get all upset about Citizens United because it said, look at this, the Supreme Court decision says that corporations are people and that they get to participate in the elections and so forth. That's horrendous. And yet at the same time, they want the biggest corporations that have ever existed to censor political speech. This is the insanity of the left. But, you know, when we look at this, you know, when will you stop lying? Well, I'll stop lying as soon as you stop lying. But if you're going to lie, I'm going to lie too. How about that? And then we go to Theresa May. Now, I talked about how Theresa May was doing her South African tour. She goes to worship at the jail cell of the communist Nelson Mandela. And then says, we support what they're doing to say that they're going to take away land from people without any compensation. They just need to do it by changing the Constitution. Because, you know, it's okay if two wolves and a sheep vote on what's for dinner. That's just fine. No, it isn't. I talked about that at length. Now, if you have the kind of government that we set up here in America, a republic that respects individual liberties, then it doesn't matter if 99% of the people want to take your stuff or kill you. You don't allow that. You don't have the mob come out and say, we're going to take your stuff and there's nothing you can do about it. But Theresa May thinks it's okay if the mob decides that they're going to change the Constitution and allow the government to confiscate land without compensation, that'll just be fine. And if you stand in their way, they're going to kill you. Oh, that's right. They walked it back. Even as she was doing that, South Africa walked it back and said, well, you know, we need to wait on this. Maybe we need to think about this land confiscation a little bit longer and then come out and say, but we need to take the guns right now. There was like, you know what we forgot to do? We forgot to take their guns. They're going to fight us when we come in and take their land. So we got to take the guns first. And then we can kill them because they're dangerous people and we're taking their guns. And that'll be justified. And all the left, like Theresa May, will celebrate that, of course, because nobody should be allowed to have guns except for the government. And then once they take the guns, then they can take the land. They can take the people's lives if they try to oppose them in different ways. And so after she gets finished supporting the communist taking property, simply because these people are white and they've got too much of it. That's two aspects of it. You're white, you're privileged, and nobody should be able to have this much land. And if they do, we're going to take it without compensation. And if you get killed, you got it coming because you're white. And Theresa May supports that. And then she goes to a ceremony where she gets involved in trying to dance. And this is a warning to everybody. Don't try this if you're a politician. You know, dancing is stupid and it is difficult to accomplish, especially if you're a politician. Roll this footage of Theresa May. And I'll try to describe this to those of you who are listening, because we have a lot of people listening on radio and podcast. This really has to be seen. I don't know that I can do it justice by trying to describe her particular moves, but let's go ahead and run this video and I'll try to describe it. There she is. That is the most out of sync. She's just thrusting her arms out awkwardly, swinging from side to side. But the arm thrusts, I think, are one of the most interesting things. Never quite seen anything like that. You know, I don't dance because I used to be in a band when I was in college, and I played a lot of dances watching other people dance. But I've never seen anybody get to the level of awkwardness that Theresa May was able to achieve at that African ceremony there. As RT says, it's hilarious. But yeah, that just doesn't do it justice. You know, when I watched other people dance, it's like, you know, I never really felt comfortable doing it. Like I said, it's difficult to do, and I felt stupid doing it. Look stupid doing it if I did try. So as I watched other people, I thought, you know, I don't really think I should. That should be required viewing by anybody who's running for office. You know, watch this footage of Theresa May trying to dance and make sure that you don't do that. And as we look at her robotic moves, there's an article that came out earlier this week talking about how artificial intelligence is going to be getting involved, not just in the kind of things that you expect to see it in blue collar jobs, in manufacturing, but of course it's going to go into white-collar jobs, even the jobs of the politicians. I mean, when you look at the robotic moves of Theresa May, don't you think that when George Soros is looking at these politicians, he would much prefer to have a mechanical robot doing this for him instead of these flesh-and-blood robots that are out there doing his bidding? Or the Rothschilds with Macron? When we come back, I'm going to talk about what is ahead in some of the threats from robots, but I'm also going to talk about what Macron, the Rothschild robot, is talking about and how it applies to this new film about going to the moon.
Waging war on corruption, it's David.
Welcome back. As I said, I was just talking to Theresa May doing very awkward moves. We probably could get a robot that could dance better than Theresa May. I'm sure we could. I've seen that little robot that they've got at Honda. He's much more graceful than Theresa May. I guess the best way to describe it, as I do those arm movements, if you've ever seen Steve Martin in the early days of Saturday Night Live, and he would do, we are two wild and crazy guys. And he'd do these arm movements. That's kind of, I guess that's where she learned to dance, watching Steve Martin on Saturday Night Live. That's the only thing I can think of that even comes close to approximating the movements of Theresa May in that dance. But the article is talking about artificial intelligence and the future of politics. Saying, you know, we're very, very divided right now. Yes, we are. It said only 29% of respondents in a recent poll said they had trust in the institutions that shape our society. So the solution, according to these people in the UK, is, well, we need to have robots then. That we can, because we can trust robots, right? Again, this goes back to the early days of computers when we would go get the big printouts and the great big sheets of paper and everything. And it's like, oh, look, I have a computer printout here. Well, that doesn't prove anything. If your data is garbage, if your model is garbage, garbage in, garbage out. Just because it was spit out by a computer that costs millions of dollars doesn't mean it's right. But people still have that complex. Oh, look, this is done by artificial intelligence, or it was done by a robot or whatever. I just don't know when we look at this. Yeah, it'd be hard to get anything that's even more artificial than our current crop of politicians. But yeah, you could get there. But you have to understand that behind all of this, eventually, it goes back to people. And because people are not perfect, there's going to be some kind of a flaw in this artificial intelligence. And understand that there's two different types of artificial intelligence. There's a generalized artificial intelligence, which is what you see depicted in all the sci-fi movies about the singularity, about Skynet becoming self-aware. That is a general artificial intelligence. Look, it, you know, it has this magical Pinocchio moment where it's like, I'm a boy. I'm not a puppet anymore. I'm a boy. I don't believe that's going to happen. There's a lot of people who think that's going to happen. Most of those people are diehard evolutionary materialists who believe that if they replicate the human brain with enough precision, that just somehow, magically, life is just going to spark into this thing. They don't understand that we have a soul and a conscience. They don't see a creator God. They can look at DNA, and they can study in detail how the body and how DNA works, but they can't see the design. And they can't see the designer behind it. And they don't understand that there is something else there that we can't come to grips with. But so I don't see that as a threat. That doesn't mean that artificial intelligence can't run away and can't do some very, very dangerous things as we turn more and more things over to it, whether it's our automobiles and our transportation, or whether it's the management of, let's say, a nuclear power plant or something like that. It could be very, very threatening, very, very dangerous to us. I see the greatest danger from artificial intelligence being generalized artificial intelligence. I'm sorry, not generalized, but a specific artificial intelligence. What they say is applied artificial intelligence. And a good example of that are the autonomous vehicles. The autonomous vehicles are not Skynet going around. The autonomous vehicles, if they were to work properly, you would tell it, take me from point A to point B, and it would manipulate its, look at what's going on in the road and all the different inputs and things that are happening on the road and navigate its way in real time through all these different live, constantly changing obstacles. That is applied artificial intelligence. And even that is something that is a very, very complex task, but it's not out there designing other cars, for example. That would be maybe more of a generalized artificial intelligence. Nevertheless, as people are looking at this, it's not just the politicians' jobs that are on the block. Most of us wouldn't be too concerned about that because our politicians, quite frankly, like John McCain said, he didn't have any great strategy. He didn't have any great objectives or principles or ethics that he was trying to get involved there. He wasn't trying to achieve protection of individual liberty, for example. He wasn't trying to make sure that we don't get involved in a war unless it is justified, unless we have been attacked, unless that war is being fought to end the slaughter of human lives. No, John McCain was running for president because that just was his personal ambition. And he was honest about that. I have an ambition to be president. Nothing other than that. I want to be the guy on top. And I don't really care what happens to any of you little people that get in my way. The world to him was a giant chessboard and everybody else were pawns. And their lives were meaningless to him. And he would say or do anything to get that position. And so you're going to see all the eulogies from people just like him all lined up saying great things about what a great guy he was because he was just like them. And they're going to be crying about his passing and so forth. So at that level, yeah, we could replace people like that with machines, wouldn't be any problem. We need a different brand of politician, somebody who sees the horizon, somebody who has a moral compass, somebody who has a political compass. Like I said, when we look at this situation and what is being done with the social media companies, and I say this as one of the people who has been targeted for extinction by Gulag. Not only did they shut down things that I had and had up for years without any complaint, without any warning, I'm not even allowed to put up another channel. They'll shut it down within 12 hours. I put up two videos. They shut it down within 12 hours. So they're coming after me particularly. It isn't for my content. It is for me that they're coming for. And so, but I look at this and I say, we must not lose the First Amendment. If we're going to put restrictions on what they can do, they need to be very, very specific and very, very narrow as to what they can put down. But that's not what the politicians are doing. The politicians are demanding that they take down anybody and anything that they find offensive, and that they have to do it within a certain time limit. This censorship is coming from the government. It's kind of like saying, you know, we have a problem in Washington, so let's have a constitutional convention and let's let the politicians who are the problem write us a new constitution. I have a problem with that. I have a problem with that. The preferred solution to me would be to say that they are not going to be able to take things down because they are a public forum. That's what we had a judge say to President Trump. Said, you can't take stuff down off of your personal Twitter account. You can't block people off of your personal Twitter account because your personal Twitter account, President Trump, is a public forum. Well, how can President Trump's personal account be a public forum, but Twitter itself cannot be a public forum? Why is the CEO, Jack Dorsey, allowed to take people completely off of that forum when President Trump is not allowed to take people off of just his account? Not allowed to block them off of his account, but the CEO can block them completely. There's something wrong with that approach. Something wrong with that. And so we have to make sure that they are not allowed to do that. It is a utility. And as I said before, when you have a public monopoly, and we need to understand the government's role in establishing and helping these people to get their monopolies. It wasn't an organic monopoly that came about simply because they were good at what they did. They were assisted and directed and funded in this, just like John McCain funded ISIS, funded the Mujahideen and other things. They gave them a leg up on this. And so we need to understand the government's intentions and its roles and what it can currently still demands from these corporations if we're going to approach this in the right way. But it's like the government setting up a monopoly, giving a foreign corporation control over a toll road. And the, like I've said before, the corporation says, I don't like that bumper sticker on your car. We're not going to let anybody with Ron Paul bumper sticker drive on this toll road. You're banned. And by the way, we own all the roads in the town now. Or say the same thing with a Bernie Sanders supporter. Or say, I don't like what you're saying on the internet, so I'm going to shut down your service. Oh, and I'll talk about net neutrality. Oh, we shouldn't let the ISPs do that. But we should let the social media people not be neutral. Well, let's have social media neutrality. Let's demand that from the politicians. Back into some news about robots. I also want to talk about this movie coming out, First Man. Something it tells us about globalism that I think is very important. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com because that's what funds this program. We have Ultimate Bone Broth now back in stock with a new supplier, even better ingredients. It's always been a fan favorite, but it's now back in stock. And with this, these new ingredients, it is 50% off. It's an introductory special. We also have the Ultimate Female Force, another new product that you can get information about if you go to InfoWarsStore.com. 50% off with an introductory special there as well. Bodies, our turmeric formula that we have, is 50% off as well. Helps to fight inflation and many other. It's a turmeric has long been recognized as a very effective natural ingredient to fight not only inflation, inflammation. We're going to be talking about inflation with the Argentinian economy here, but we're talking about inflammation. Inflammation of your joints, things that are going to cause pain, and also fighting other conditions in the human body. You can get that Bodies 50% off. And finally, we want to help you wake up every morning with real news. One of the ways that you can do that and wake up in the morning is with Wake Up America Coffee. You can get 24% off of that with the code REALNEWS. That is in either the original or immune support blend. Both of those are non-GMO, 100% Arabica bean. And that is Wake Up America Coffee. You can get that 20% off with the code REALNEWS at checkout at InfoWarsStore.com. Now, there's a lot of things that are going to be changing, not just for politicians. As they're saying, I think they're going to be one of the last ones to be replaced. They're going to protect their jobs at all costs. But we're seeing a lot of manufacturing jobs being replaced. We see the way people are being treated by these billionaires like Jeff Bezos? You think you're going to have, if these guys get in charge, you think they're going to be humane in terms of the way that they treat you? Amazon, one of the top employers, has so many employees on food stamps in at least five states. They are the top employer where their employees have to be on food stamps. How's that? You know, we saw those reports coming out of the UK about how people had to have a bottle with them at their workstation because they couldn't take the time to go to the bathroom. That's the kind of pressure that they were under during the holiday season. But they're not paying them much either. In five states, they are the top employer of those who have to have food stamps in addition to their job. That's how little they pay them. In 2017, nearly one in three Amazon employees in Arizona was on food stamps or lived with somebody who was, according to data that just came out. So that's going to be the future once these guys have their robots in place. And we're seeing this happening in factories. We're seeing it being proposed for the autonomous cars. Talked about that yesterday with Eric Peters, how Toyota just put a $500 million investment into Uber, and Lyft and these other companies are saying that the thing that makes their rides expensive are those people in the car. We got to get them out of the car. We don't want those drivers in there. We're going to cut the throat of the drivers that we're using right now and using their cars, using their private cars. We're going to cut them out of the process. We're going to have automated cars, so they're not going to have jobs. The truck drivers are going to be cut out of the process. A lot of people that are working in transportation. Oxford University is saying 47% of jobs will disappear in the next 25 years. The Economist says no government is prepared for this. This is why they view all of us as being very dangerous, a very dangerous proletariat, because these people are, at their essence, Marxist in their outlook. They're materialistic, and they think that they are the ones who should be the dictators of our lives. And so they refer to us in the Bilderberg meetings as the precariat, because the proletariat puts them in a precarious position. What happens if we lose all of our jobs? Are we going to get upset about that? How are they going to pacify us? Well, universal basic income until they can do a soft kill program. That's really where this is headed. We have to understand where this is headed. They said so far the loss has been restricted to blue-collar variety, particularly in manufacturing. But that's not the way that this is going to work out, as they point out. You think that if you're doing something as an accountant or as a doctor or as a lawyer or a teacher or a bureaucrat or a financial analyst, all those jobs can be replaced by applied artificial intelligence. We don't have to get to the point that is being looked forward to by people like Ray Kurzweil, singularity, where we merge with the machines, this transhumanist future. And oh, by the way, I'm going to be talking about that September 14th. I'm going to be at a conference in Branson, Missouri, the Gen6, GENSIX.com. And you can actually save money on the live stream. We've sold out, I think, or at least they're close to sold out last time I looked. Have a large theater there with about 3,000 people, but a lot of people are going to be watching that online. You can stream that and get a 10% discount with the code ALEX. Just for InfoWars listeners. And you can sign up for that. It's going to be a convention. It's going to last for several days. We're going to be talking about the post-human future that the globalists have in mind, because this is what they want. They want a system where humans are not involved. Just a few people are going to own everything. We see this in the last several weeks. Drudge does a good job of curating these stories from all the different corners of the internet. We see the robot that makes hamburgers in California. We got the robots that are picking strawberries. We got the robots that are hunting down lionfish. Well, that's good because they can save the coral reef if they hunt down the lionfish. But understand that, as one headline put it, this is the first generation of autonomous killer robots. Because you put these robots out there and say, hunt down the organism that looks like this and kill it. And of course, that's going to give them plausible deniability when these things go out of control. That is the thing that we have to be concerned about as we move forward to the future. And you should also be concerned about the fact that they want to eliminate not just human beings, but right now the approach is to eliminate our culture And we can see this in what Emmanuel Macron is doing, as well as the new movie that everybody is talking about coming out of the Venice Film Festival. First Man. It's about the first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong. And, of course, he jumped down and said, this is a small step for man, a giant leap for mankind. But he planted the American flag. And they don't do that in the movie. And they don't do that deliberately. Because I want to emphasize that this is a human achievement and not a national achievement. At the same time, all this is happening, of course, and this is being pushed out to us by Hollywood, always eager to push that narrative out there. We have Macron on a tour. I gave you some of the things that he had to say about Viktor Orban in Hungary, saying, how dare him support Christianity? How dare him say that? We are creating a humanist future. And again, if you want a transhumanist future, if you want to see humans made extinct, support humanism. Because all the people who signed the Humanist Manifesto were the creators of this transhumanist idea that we're going to end mankind, we're going to live forever, we're going to transcend our bodies and so forth, we're going to end humanity and the earth and species as we see them. We're going to do that with genetic engineering, we're going to replace people with artificial intelligence and robots and so forth. That is their dream. And you're not going to be part of that new group. Just the people like Jeff Bezos who want to be a part of that group. But Emmanuel Macron is going, Viktor Orban in Hungary is a hypocrite. He's taking EU money and he's out there praising Christianity at the same time. How dare him? And then he's making a tour of Denmark and Finland. And he had some other interesting things to say in that three-day tour. While he was doing that, he was talking about the progressive arc that he is establishing. How he's going to create a European Union superstate. Speaking at a dinner with Denmark's Queen Margaret, he praised the Scandinavian nation, as Breitbart reports, as a nation that is completely open to the rest of the world, in contrast to the one that he represents, those awful Frenchmen that he represents. He said they are Gaulish, stubborn, and resistant to change. He said France has a deep and complex identity, which has always been thought of as universalism. Of course, this is a guy who used to work for the Rothschilds as a banker, before stating that he believes that he has succeeded in provoking a cultural change in the nation since he was elected. He said people are changing their minds and they're much more open to risk. Yeah, let's just open up those borders and let people in. We don't need to know who they are. We can be letting in any kind of terrorists, or we can be letting in people who are just going to rob and rape the population and don't have a job and don't want a job. Yeah, we'll just bring that in. He says, you will see France transformed by our people. And this is the thing that he had to say that's most alarming. He said, the true Dane does not exist. He is a European. Even your language is not Danish. It's European. The same is true for the French. We've had the German president come out recently and say, there are no native Germans. We are a nation of immigrants. This is what globalism is about. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. You know, as we see Emmanuel Macron, he's kind of become the point man, I think, more than anybody, more than Merkel. Merkel is in a lot of trouble. She can't really do much. Her hands are kind of tied in Germany. Barely won the election, but had such a low vote total that she had to create a coalition government. Took her 6 months to do that. And then after just a couple of months, that coalition nearly unraveled again over the issue of immigration. All this was over the issue of immigration. We've got the current German president, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, saying there are no native Germans. We are a nation of immigrants. And the people agree with him who are there. That's why they're voting against his party. You've had many Germans say, I don't recognize my city anymore. I can't walk out here safely in public. It has been completely transformed. They've taken this completely away. And so now you got Macron going out there and saying, I'm setting up a new kind of universalism. We are setting up a European superstate. And I'm being very effective at changing people's minds. You're going to see France that is transformed. Now he says it's by his people. It's going to be transformed by him, he thinks. And he talks about the as he's in Denmark. He says, the true Dane does not exist. And he said, the same thing is true for the French. Even your language is not just Danish. It is European. And I think that's a very important point. You know, as I talked a great deal yesterday about the identity politics of George Soros and the left, how you've got this candidate in Florida who won the Democrat nomination for governor, and everything about him is he doesn't want to talk about the socialist policies because those aren't that popular, even with the Democrats. Not that many of them want Medicare for all. It's not a winning proposition. Even the Democrats know that it is not doable. It's not practical. They want to abolish ICE. They want to impeach President Trump. They want to raise taxes. None of that stuff is really very popular. So they focus on their identity. Vote for me. I'm a black man. Or in New York, you know, vote for me. I'm a woman. And look at this awful guy, this Andrew Cuomo. He wanted to lower the temperature in the studio, freeze me out. That's what men always do in offices, isn't it? You know, all that kind of stuff. In Texas, you've got this guy, Robert O'Rourke. Again, another Soros donor, recipient, gotten a lot of Soros money, a lot of money from the billionaire supporting this leftist agenda, and same policies, open borders, higher taxes, let's impeach Trump, let's abolish ICE, and so forth. And so what does he do? He has carved out a political career for himself in El Paso by passing himself off as a Hispanic. And there's nothing at all about him Hispanic, not his name, nothing. And so they come out with this identity politics, and we talk about this, they try to heighten these differences between people. And as I pointed out, even focusing on skin color, that's such a small variation in human genetics. You know, the Bible talks about the fact that we are all of one blood. God has created all of us as human beings. In the Bible, the distinction is not about races. You know, it talks about the race of man, talks about the race of Adam or the race of Christ or whatever. Those are the different races, differences which direction they're running. But the Bible talks about nations, tongues, and tribes. And what is Emmanuel Macron trying to do to shut down? And, of course, these other people in Germany trying to shut down. They're trying to shut down what is represented by nations, tongues, and tribes. Those are the real differences between human beings. When you think about it, the language, you know, he even says, your language is not Danish. And same thing is true of the French. It is European. Oh, really? I hadn't noticed that. I thought we really did have a French language. He now wants to pretend that that doesn't exist. But the Bible talks about different tongues and tribes. The tribes are the cultures. The tongues are the languages. And the nations are the political systems that are set up. And how these things are divided. People who have different cultures, different languages, they set up different political systems. Some political systems are better than others, but they want to subsume every culture, every political system, and now he's even saying, you don't have even a language or a culture. We're going to subsume all of that into a one-world government. That is the design of these people. And that's really what they're trying to push on you with this movie about going to the moon. More on that on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Joining us at the bottom of the hour is going to be Lee Stranahan. He's going to be talking about what is being done by the Ukrainians to try to mess with our election. To return the favor of what we did in their country. The same people that were working with Victoria Nuland, the Obama State Department, and others now want to work with Democrats to overthrow our election. Lee Stranahan is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. I was just talking about Emmanuel Macron and how he is trying to subsume everything into one world government, one world humanity. And, of course, this is a conscious decision being made by the people producing First Man. And if it was just the fact that they're going to focus on Neil Armstrong's comments, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, and then ignore the planting of the American flag, you could say, okay, well, they're just doing that. If that was the only thing that was being done. But when we look at the comments of Macron trying to pretend that there's no French culture, there's no French language, it's just Europe right now. That's all that matters is Europe. And we're going to make a European superstate. And how dare these nationalists like Salvini and Italy and Orban and Hungary. How dare them say that they are going to look after the safety of their people? He said, in France, I've been able to change the culture, and I'm getting people there who are willing to accept risks, you know, like just opening up the borders. We've got a welfare state here. Let's just let everybody come in. No problem. This is part of their design to take down the countries that could stand in the way of the globalist one-world government. They have to destroy those countries before they can establish their new world order. And the way they do that is with the strategy that was openly talked about by Cloward and Piven for decades. These socialist economists said, we need to promote the welfare state. We need to get more people on it. We can then collapse the country, and that's when we can establish our true socialism, our true central control of everything. Like we see in Venezuela, for example. And that didn't work. People didn't aspire to be on welfare, no matter how good they tried to make that look. So they said, well, let's just open up the borders and we can bring enough people in from foreign countries that we can collapse the system. And that's what they're currently working on. That was their plan B that they came up with after a couple of decades of the other thing not working. So now they're pushing this one world government, all of mankind, let's forget about nations. And that's really the agenda that's being pushed in this movie, First Man, when they deliberately avoid planting the flag. And as we talk about going to the moon, we see that this is something that is really stepping up. As Zero Hedge points out, NASA is revealing plans for a permanent moon base, and we want to have lots of humans in space, they say. Isn't it kind of interesting how this has changed? We had what we were told was a space race. We had to get to the moon first. And as soon as they got there, went there two or three times, they said, and then they shut down the entire program. Destroyed all the rockets, destroyed all the plans. Alex had a guy that he knew for many, many decades that worked there in NASA. You'd see him on the moon launches there in mission control. And he said, it's really kind of strange. We're all kind of wondering, why are they shutting all this stuff down all of a sudden? And then when you talk about this, as one of the individuals looking at this said, you know, we didn't go for 40 years. If you go back to 2009, he said, the United States, through NASA, made a critical discovery, which is that the moon has hundreds of billions of tons of water ice. To me, that should have changed our direction immediately, he said. From 1969, when we first landed on the moon, up until 2009, a lot of people believed that the moon was bone dry. Why would they think that if they weren't, you know, didn't they take any samples? Why would they not know there's water there? They didn't go just once. They went multiple times, but they didn't know there was any water there. In 2008, Indians did an experiment, and they realized that there was water ice on the moon. Then we did an experiment, and we realized just how much water ice could potentially be on the moon at the pole. So the question is, during those 40 years, we missed that. What else did we miss? And how could they miss that? Good question. You know, that raises a very interesting question. The other interesting questions about the moon is who owns the moon? Space lawyers are looking at this. And of course, this is a story that goes back to when we had the blood moon. Everybody was talking about the blood moon and so forth. And so now you've got Hollywood making films saying, we've got to go to the moon. Let's not show the American flag there. Let's raise questions. Well, who really does own the moon? This is probably going to be the bankers, don't you think? I'm sure that the Rothschilds have already told Macron who owns the moon. It's probably going to be the Rothschilds who own the moon. Well, it's going to be interesting, but it is kind of interesting when we look at the culture, we look at the politicians, and we look at Hollywood, how they are pushing this agenda of one-world globalism. Got to shut down nationalism in every aspect. And now they say they're going to go to the moon or go back to the moon because now they've discovered after 40 years that there's water there. They didn't know that before. All right, so let's take a look at CNN Gate. For something completely different. Actually, we've covered this, but I think it's interesting to go back and look at not only the fact that Carl Bernstein and others are doubling down on this, going to war with President Trump. President Trump is calling Carl Bernstein Sloppy Carl. He always says that one word adjective that he puts on people. And that does actually work. You know, Carl Bernstein looks pretty sloppy in his personal appearance. But the thing that's really sloppy about Carl Bernstein is his journalism. He could call him stubborn Bernstein, but that might make him look like he had some integrity. And I don't think Bernstein has any integrity, quite frankly. Bernstein tweeted back at President Trump, I spent my life as a journalist bringing truth to life, to light, through the administration of both parties. No taunt will diminish my commitment to that mission. Mission accomplished, right? I don't think Woodward and Bernstein are the heroes that they're made out to be because of Watergate. My favorite comment on all this is what Nick Nolte said at Breitbart. He said, hey, Carl Bernstein, because he's the one at the center of these CNN lies. He said, Bernstein, remember, the cover-up is worse than the crime. That's what they said about Watergate. And that's what they're doing right now. And I think that we need to call this CNN Gate. I think that's really what's going on right now. What you're seeing now is the exposure of the character of CNN. And they've exposed themselves in multiple ways. I think it is totally shameless what CNN did. These people are out here pontificating about journalists bringing truth to light and so forth. As CNN is out there campaigning for InfoWars to be shut down completely. Absolutely amazing. Nobody believes CNN. Again, the Pons channel is a Pon program is getting more viewership on the History Channel than CNN is getting. They had their viewership collapse in August is just now finishing. But with a week left, CNN's viewership, even before CNN Gate, this latest thing coming up, CNN's viewership had collapsed by 15% in just 1 month. So, yeah, they are collapsing. And President Trump said, CNN is working frantically to find their source. Well, look hard, because it doesn't exist. Whatever was left of CNN's credibility is now gone. That's their new story that they're sticking to. Oh, we didn't just have one source, Lanny Davis. We had another one. So President Trump says, well, they're looking for him. Their source might be a female looking for the source. Keep looking. Look hard because you don't have him. And this is the essential lie that they're standing by. Again, Lanny Davis was the source. He started walking back what he had said. So their source lied about President Trump and Trump's son and the Trump Tower meeting. And then he lied, and CNN lied about him being the source. And they've been caught in both of these. And so Lanny Davis is out there, later admitted that he was a source for CNN's story, even though CNN said, well, we contacted Lanny Davis, and he declined to comment. No, he didn't decline to comment. He was your anonymous source. He was the comment that you guys were focusing on. So now they've doubled down and said, well, he's not the only source. Trump said they're being torn apart from within because they've been caught in a major lie. And they refuse to admit the mistake. And so when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Carl Bernstein, the guy who once upon a time said it's not the crime but the cover-up that is more interesting. And I think that there's more than just this cover-up that Bernstein has been involved in. It's the connections to the CIA that he's been involved in for a very long time. And we're going to talk about Operation Mockingbird when we come back. Stay with us. Steve Strenahan is going to be joining us at the next segment. I want to talk a little bit about CNN Gate and play for you a couple of clips. Don Lemon is now saying, well, nobody's perfect. But Carl Bernstein thinks he's perfect. Carl Bernstein thinks he's on a mission from God for freedom of the press, while his company is demanding that entire news organizations be shut down. Carl Bernstein is trying to make a non-person out of people like me by having Google take us off of the internet. So we're going to talk a little bit about Carl Bernstein, his history of working with the CIA, pretending that he is exposing the CIA. Before we do, real quickly, I do need to talk about what's going on with with President Trump canceling the pay raises of federal workers. The Democrats are having a field day with this, saying this is happening right as he's going in. We're going into Labor Day holiday weekend. This is a slap in the face to Democrats. No, it's a... to workers, rather. No, it's a slap in the face to those Democrats in Washington. That's really who it's a slap in the face to. President Trump sent a letter to House Speaker Paul Ryan on Thursday announcing that a majority of civilian federal employees will not receive a pay increase next year, undoing the original 2.1% pay increase that was supposed to take effect in 2019. The president explained that the change is an effort to put our nation on a fiscally sustainable course, and the federal agency budgets cannot sustain such increases. He's absolutely right. We cannot continue to go further into debt by about $1 trillion a year. And this was a concern that a lot of people had when the president signed the budget. There was no concern about what the debt was, and something has to give somewhere. I'm glad that he's not giving them a pay raise. Unfortunately, he's still given us a record increase in defense spending. Just our increase in defense spending is bigger than what the Russian entire defense budget is, just this increase. And so when we look at different things like this, this is targeted pretty much towards the Democrat Party and the people who are opposing him in Washington, I believe. I'm fine with that. But, of course, the pay raise for the military is not going to be taken down. They're getting their biggest pay raise since 2009, on track to receive a 2.6% bump. Again, I don't begrudge them a pay increase. I think they probably do need a pay increase. I'm concerned more about the big budget programs for weapons and so forth, the overall military spending, not just the military pay. I think that's fine to give them a pay raise. I think we have to get some kind of control over these weapon systems that are out of control. That kind of spending cannot be sustained. And as the Democrats want to bellyache and complain about this, let's just remind everybody again that in many of these states, just as you've got Andrew Gillum in Florida saying, hey, we need to put together a coalition, a confederation of states, you know, like California and Illinois and New York, and we can get this all together and we can do Medicare for all. We can provide free health care for everybody. Well, these people in these states that he's named are not able to fund the pension program for their state employees. So you want to look at this and say, well, President Trump didn't give the federal workers a pay raise here that they were expecting. The Democrats are out there promising pensions and promising pay raises, and they can't deliver them. Each one of those states that we just mentioned have an unfunded pension liability for their state employees. All these Democrat-run states tell the Democrat state employees, we've got a great pension plan for you, except there's no money. And they've got a shortfall of anywhere from $400 to $600 billion per state. Per state. Where are they going to get that money? Who's going to be able to pay those kind of taxes? It's not sustainable. It isn't going to happen. And as this is all coming out, and as President Trump is saying, we've got to do something to get control. Yeah, he's absolutely right. We've got to do more than just stop the, freeze the pay rate of the civilian federal employees. Something else is going to have to be done. Or we're going to go this direction. Argentina. Central bank has hiked rates to 60% as their currency is collapsing. This is not Venezuela. This is Argentina. Argentina is struggling to cope with another financial crisis. Comes after Argentina's government unexpectedly asked for the early release of a $50 billion loan from the IMF. In addition to IMF support, Argentina's government has also raised interest rates to 45% in an attempt to curb inflation and to slow the dramatic slide of their currency, the peso. See, we cannot continue down this path of unlimited spending. Keynesian economics, macroeconomics that is taught in the colleges is every bit as much of a bit of nonsense as all this white privilege stuff. You cannot continue to spend this money without ever having any kind of consequences. All right, before we run out of time, I want to go back to the interview with Allison Camerota. She had John Sununu on. He's former governor of New Hampshire. Worked in a Bush administration, been with the Republican Party very high up for a very long time. She wanted him to come on and praise John McCain because that is now the new hobby of the Democrat never-Trumpers. Let's say wonderful things about John McCain because he said such horrible things about President Trump. We love him now. And I want you to hear this exchange going back and forth as he was brought there to talk about John McCain, and Allison Camerota then tries to spin this and having him say negative things about President Trump, and John Sununu isn't going to go there. But listen to what happens in this interview.
Governor, what do you think about President Trump rejecting the practice of putting out an official White House statement about John McCain's service and sacrifice?
Look, that was printed in the Washington Post, and I have to be honest with you, I don't give much credence to what I read.
We also have that reporting.
Yeah, well... Same thing applies, Alice.
Governor.
I don't have much confidence in you either.
You come on CNN, and we appreciate you coming on CNN, and we appreciate your take on it. But I don't appreciate you denigrating our reporting. I think that you know we have excellent reporters here. But are you saying that you don't want to believe that? You don't want to believe that President Trump would do that about
John McCain. I'm saying that I don't want to comment on a report that I haven't satisfied myself is correct.
And if that report were true...
I'm not going to answer the hypothetical.
It's not hypothetical. This is our reporting. We have rock-solid sources,
Allison,
in
look,
the White House that there
on,
was a statement that was drafted.
You asked me to come on
drafted.
To talk about John McCain. I'm here to talk about John McCain as I remember him. I'm not here to talk about the press's handling of a difference between the White House and the press corps at this time.
So he says, I don't put too much credence in what the Washington Post puts out. Well, we put out that story, too. He just kind of chuckles and goes, yeah, I don't have much confidence in you either. Mr. Sununu, you came on our program. How dare you come on here and question our credibility? Well, everybody is questioning their credibility. It's pretty obvious. It's not just Republicans, as I pointed out. You have people at Politico. You have the Washington Post even pull back from the story and say, we don't want to go there anymore. But Carl Bernstein and these other people who are far more interested in a coup than they are the truth continue to persist. You had Glenn Greenwald call him out on it. Many others call him out on it. Don Lemon had this to say. Let's run video clip 6.
Anti-fascism, which is what they were there fighting. Listen, there's, you know, no organization is perfect. There was some violence. No one condones the violence, but there were different reasons for Antifa and for these neo-Nazis to be there. One, racist fascists. The other group fighting racist fascists. There is a fascist. There's a distinction.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, nobody's perfect. We like Antifa. And, you know, it's racist to say that Antifa is white, even though they're all a bunch of white revolutionaries that are total Marxists. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. We're going to talk to Lee Stranahan.
Common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and joining us now is Lee Stranahan. Lee has worked for publications on the left and on the right. He's worked for the Huffington Post. He's worked for Breitbart. He now has a radio show, Fault Lines, on SputnikNews.com, co-hosting that with Garland Nixon. You can find him on CitizenJournalismSchool.com, also on Populist.tv. And Lee wants to join us with some information about an interview that he just had with an individual who has information about how the Ukrainians that were being worked with by the Obama administration, as well as, of course, people like Soros and John McCain, how they were working to try to undermine President Trump going back to 2016. And we've just had some email logs that have been released showing that there was correspondence between Fusion GPS and between Clinton associates and between other people to set up this meeting at the Trump Tower and so forth. There have been multiple pieces of information showing that there were many attempts to try to arrange incriminating meetings. This was the only one that anybody ever took them up on, this particular meeting at Trump Tower. Still, there was no information exchange. There was no money exchange. Nothing happened. It was a promise of, well, we got some opposition research here. They're just trying to taint them by exposure. But I wanted to talk to Lee because he's got some information about somebody that he worked with who had some dealings with Alexandra Chalupa. And you've talked about her before. Welcome, Lee, and tell us a little bit about, explain to the audience who Alexandra Chalupa is, her connections to the DNC and so forth.
Sure, David. First off, thanks for having me on the show. It's great to see you again. Alexandra Chalupa is a DNC operative. She worked in the Clinton White House, and she is at the center of this. And I got to say, when you look at it, this goes back before 2016 even. Now, I first heard about Alexandra Chalupa in a story that was reported on Politico, you know, the establishment publication, and reported by someone who's not on the right, Ken Vogel, who's now at the New York Times. But I think people make a mistake when they just dismiss a source outright. You have to read every story and judge the facts on their own merits. Does that make sense? So,
oh, yeah, that's right.
When I read this story in 2017, January of 2017, by Ken Vogel and David Stern, they talked about Alexandra Chalupa and how the Ukrainians had interfered in the election. Now, I got to point out that what we're saying here, this directly connects to Comey, it connects to the FBI, and it goes back to the 2013-2014 Soros-funded revolution in Ukraine that was called the Maidan, right? That's where they took the government of Viktor Yanukovych, who, like him or not, corrupt or not, was democratically elected, let's just say that, right, clearly. Right. And it ended up in a coup that was funded by the U.S. and Soros, fomented by them, and then Yanukovych ended up fleeing. So I will tell you, first off, do you care about, I'm just, David, you as an American, do you care about Ukrainian politics that much? I don't, right?
No. No, as a matter of fact, yeah, but people like George Soros and people like Victoria Nuland at the State Department and people like John McCain, they love that. I mean, that's what they live for. The world is their chessboard, isn't it?
That's exactly right. It's not that I don't care about the Ukrainian people the way I care about all people, right? I do.
That's right.
And
we don't want to see them killed for some kind of political Machiavellian game that these people have, for whether it's for power or for money or whatever their objective is. I don't really care. I don't want to see these people's countries torn up into war for that.
That's exactly right. And so I'm not a pacifist, but I'm anti-war, right? And I'm anti-intervention. Right. So what happened was we set this up. Soros set this up. And by the way, Soros is directly involved in the rest of what happened. So we install a government in Ukraine, okay? We also, through the FBI, and this is where Comey comes in, sets up something called NABU, which is the National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine, which is controlled by the DOJ and the FBI. This is 2014. Now we've put these...
This is what colonialism looks like in the 21st century, isn't it?
Well, not just that, but you're exactly right. And let me amplify that. This is what colonialism looks like when you don't go in with guns and bayonets, but you go in with an Occupy Wall Street style revolution. Does that make sense? That's what Soros has learned.
That's right.
And so we put this government into place. We put NABU into place. Now cut to 2016. Okay. Alexandra Chalupa, according to Politico, according to that story, talked to a guy named Andrei Telyashenko. He worked in the embassy. And he was also told by Ambassador Chali, the ambassador, and by a woman named Oksana Shular, who was the head of the embassy, I want you to coordinate with Alexandra Chalupa, this DNC operative. I don't want you to talk to Trump, and I want you to give them dirt on Trump. Now, that's what Politico reported, right? So you know me. We've talked about this story a number of times, David.
Yep.
For a long time. You and I have been talking about this for over a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk to the whistleblower, Andrei Telyashenko. So for a year, I have spent, and you know what it's like when someone's a whistleblower, they have a lot of reasons to be afraid, right?
Yes, yes.
So that's right. I've been I've tried to talk to Andrei, and about 2 weeks ago, I talked to him for the first time. I mean, I've been talking to him a little bit, but on record, did a full interview. And he amplified everything that I said, absolutely confirmed it. He stands by the story that was reported. Furthermore, don't take my word for it. If anybody just goes to the internet and types in WikiLeaks Ali, like Muhammad Ali, because Alexandra, her nickname is Ali Chalupa, you'll find the email where Ali Chalupa was reporting to the head of communications, director of communications, Luis Miranda. You'll see that email. So this is not just this guy saying it. We have paper proof. This is the collusion and interference. It's with the Democrats and the Ukrainians. And it started before the Russians are even alleged to have started the hack. Now, you're seeing there, you guys have put up on screen, the CNN story where she denied working with it. Well, I asked him about that. She's denying working with it, but the paper shows clearly she was working with it. with the DNC. She was directly communicating with the communications director. Now, so this is a big deal. And I actually was on with Alex. Once we broke the story on my radio show, the first person I called was Alex Jones. And I said, Alex, I broke this big story. Alex had me on, God bless him, that afternoon. Okay. Because I will say this again, not blowing smoke, InfoWars are the only people with the guts to deal with this story.
That's why they shut us down. That's why they shut us down on YouTube and Facebook. Yeah.
And absolutely. Now, here's what happened. So I talked to the whistleblower, did that interview. He tells me some things that are off the record. So I think about it for about a week. We've developed a relationship now, even though he's not pro-Russian, not pro-Putin, and was worried that I work for Sputnik. Was worried. Well, I'll be honest. He was worried about that. He saw my reporting and was like, okay, this guy's honest. I trust him. Then he told me something completely outrageous. How much time before we go to the break, David?
We got just 53 seconds. So you want to wait and hold this until we come back from the break? Or go ahead.
That's right. It's a perfect teaser, don't you think? When we come back, wait till you hear what he told me, David. This is the first time we've talked about this at InfoWars. It's a very big deal, and it ties right into the Steele dossier.
Well, very important, and I can understand his reluctance as a whistleblower, because as I was saying at the beginning of the program, this guy, Henry Koehner, who was a staff member for John McCain, just seems to turn up with all these scandals. Benghazi, Fast and Furious, IRS, the Tea Party persecution, and so forth. And begging the IRS to come after political enemies and financially ruin them. And guess who is in charge of vetting the whistleblowers for the special counsel? This same guy who worked with John McCain all these different years. Stay with us. We'll be right back with this bombshell information from Lee Stranahan. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Lee Stranahan. Lee has been following the trail of Alexandra Chalupa for quite some time. Of course, she is a Ukrainian-American. She's worked very closely with the DNC and Hillary campaign, trying to get dirt on President Trump or to essentially frame him. She spoke to a Ukrainian man, who Lee Stranahan has interviewed in the past, and he's given us information about that. But there's more information that's come out. As Lee was able to get this guy's trust, as this guy began to see his reporting, he gave him some more information, and we were about to get to that as we had to go to a break, and so we were left with this cliffhanger as to what this new information is. And I think you've got an audio clip as part of this interview as well, don't you, Lee?
We do. I audio taped the entire thing. Let me just make a side point here before we get to this big stuff. You know, this new story of CNN and what they did with Lanny Davis, where they said that he wouldn't comment, but they quoted him. As a journalist, one of the things that bothers me is anonymous sourcing is an important part of journalism. In other words, when you have a whistleblower, and in this case, you'll see we have two whistleblowers, they are often in danger. Andre is in Kiev, Ukraine. Okay. This is a guy who's being threatened. He was threatened with being fired, and he's now the ambassador, Charlie, the ambassador to Ukraine, who John Bolton just met with, has been going around lying about this guy. So as a journalist, people need to understand, if you're in the audience, that when a reputable journalist uses anonymous sourcing, there's a reason for it.
And what they've done at CNN by doing this, what they did with Lanny Davis, using him as a source, saying it was an anonymous source, and people would expect that since this is information coming from Michael Cohen, they're going to think, well, it's coming from Lanny Davis. So to push back against that, they say, well, and then we talked to Lanny Davis, and he had no comment when he was their source for the story. And so that lie that has come out there has had, and the other part of this too, Lee, is that we've had a lot of things that have come out from CNN, from the Washington Post, that have been attributed to anonymous sources that have turned out to be lies. So this isn't the first time we've seen a lie, but this one with the lie about the anonymous source and then saying, well, we talked to the anonymous source and he didn't have anything. That's really...
And you see what I'm saying? As somebody who does journalism for a living, it makes everybody, it makes as soon as people see an anonymous source, which is what we're going to talk about in a second, a lot of people are like, well, wait, that's BS. Now, before we get to the blockbuster info he just gave me, I'd like to play a clip. I have about a minute, a little less than a minute clip. I want people to hear Andre for himself. This is him talking about meeting Alexander Chalupa. That's the clip I sent. So this is Andre, who's in Kiev, Ukraine. This is him. This is the first time when I did this interview, nobody's heard his voice. I recorded the interview. I've got a transcript, and we're going to be publishing that at populist.tv this weekend. But listen to this clip of Andre talking about meeting with Alexander Chalupa. Then I'll tell you what he told me about the Steele dossier.
Yeah, and she asks me, you should talk, guys. You have a lot in common. You should get to know each other well. And Andre, you should help her. And then she backs off, and Alexander Chalupa introduces herself, says, I work for the DNC. And we're working with the Hillary's team, and we are working really closely on getting dirt and any information connecting, at that time, presidential candidate Donald Trump and his team, any of his team members, and with Russia or any Russian mafia, as she said. And I was like, why are you looking for that information? Because we plan to have a committee hearing in Congress in September, October, right before the elections.
I want you to think about that, Dave.
At that time, presidential candidate Donald Trump off the election, if we find or we get any dirt on her within our hands and that we can use against him.
Wow.
Now, David, think about that. This is before the Russian hack. This is before Mueller's alleging. I don't believe there was a Russian hack, by the way, but let's go with what Mueller says. This is before that. A Democratic operative is saying they're planning to have hearings, but they're planning the hearing. David, if I said to you, hey, you know, David, we're going to have a trial about you. And you said, well, what's the evidence? I said, well, we're working on that.
We're trying to create it right now. We're composing it right now.
What are the charges? We're working on that. This was their game plan. And the game plan started when they overthrew the Ukraine. So there's Andre. You can hear for himself. People can judge. But this is what he's saying there is he's repeating what Politico reported. So if people don't trust me, right, which is what some people don't trust me, it's not me. That's Andre saying it. And this is the guy who was quoted in Politico. And by the way, Politico stands by that story. They've never said, no, that's not true. That's what's going on now.
And Politico does not like President Trump. They're not going to give him any. They're not going to construct something that's going to make him look innocent. Or make it look like they were out to get him.
That's right. Now, so here's what he told me off record that now he's told me on record. And this is the big scoop. He's in Kiev, Ukraine, remember? Okay. And do you remember that Christopher Steele, one of the ways he got involved in this was that during the Maidan in 2013, Christopher Steele was writing reports about Ukraine. Remember that? That's an important detail because I'm saying there's some backup for this. Andre told me he personally knows somebody in Ukraine who was contacted by Orbis and told to just make stuff up. I'm going to say that again. Andre, who you just heard him, he knows somebody who worked for George Soros's International Renaissance, who was writing reports for Orbis and was told they came up with research and they sent it to Orbis. And Orbis said, this isn't good enough. And the person said to them, well, what do you want me to do? They said, just make up stuff. Just bring it up to the top of your head. This is major. Now, some people go, well, where's that guy? Guess what? We're working on that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I'm not going to hold off on that information, right? I'm saying this is what...
Of course, I've called this the dirty dossier. I've called it the filthy fiction. And, you know, they continue to parade that around. We have seen how they paid to put this out. We've seen that there's no corroborating evidence on any of this stuff. It all looks like it was made up. And now you've got people telling you they were told, just compose something.
And think about that. That really is a game changer in this, because if Orbis was telling people to just make stuff up, if they said that explicitly, then we know. And by the way, Andre, who's the whistleblower here, he's given me more information. Does that make sense? So I know more than we're reporting now, but I wanted to get this out and on the record because this is a person who's very credible. By the way, Andre was part of the Ukrainian government. He, again, supported the Maidan. He was part of something called the Automaidan. It was very easy to look up this guy's resume and see who he was. He's a completely legitimate source that actually nobody has disputed what he's saying about Chalupa, for instance, because they can't, right? You showed the WikiLeaks email. That's proven. And now when he tells me stuff, and he's told me some other things that are shocking, by the way, that we're going to bring out slowly. We're doing as quickly as we can, but obviously the goal, but this whistleblower in Ukraine right now, who was told, who wrote material for Orbis and was told to make it up, obviously we're trying to get him on the record, but it's a slow process because there's a lot of fear.
I mean, and, look at how, I mean, these are people in the intelligence community here in the U.S. as well as in the U.K. And we have seen how they use this circular planting of stories, and they would give some stuff anonymously to a press outlet, and then they would use that as a reference to get a FISA report. All they wanted to do was to get an investigation started, because they knew that if they could get an investigation started, they would be able to get into, I think what they want to do is get a process crime with financial information. As I've said, you know, the IRS is so complicated, foreign financial transactions are complicated, Federal Election Commission contribution rules are very complicated. If they can get something where they can make it up or whatever to get in there to try to get that financial information, they can get a process crime.
And the fear is real, because do you know who Pablo Miller is, David?
No.
Okay, I would urge
Pablo
everybody.
Miller, wasn't he working with Christopher Steele to recruit?
He works with Christopher Steele at Orbis, and he was the guy who recruited Skripal.
Yep, that's right.
Sergei Skripal, who was poisoned. So the fear is real here.
That's right, and Skripal gets poisoned right as everybody's starting to look very closely at the connections to this dossier. Yeah, not much of a coincidence there, is it? Thank you so much for joining us, Lee Stranahan. You can find him at citizenjournalismschool.com. That's our broadcast for today.